Blog Talk Radio.
Come on, everybody, put your hands together. It's got to get better. All over the world, listen to these words. People come.
People come.
People go.
People go.
Your life has been.
Your life has been.
Out of control.
Out of control.
You're confused.
You're confused.
But don't worry.
Don't worry. Your song, it will get better.
It's gotta get
better. It will get better.
It's gonna be
better. It will get better.
Cause
God is in
control, y'all.
Come to the mic at this time.
Thank you, thank you. Thanks so much, Dr. Wimborn. You know, I just, when I hear the song, it's so uplifting, you know, that Hezekiah Walker, it's going to get better. And we know that that is the truth. We know that that is the truth. And so it is wonderful to be here. It makes me smile when the music starts, you know, and all that. I'm really feeling so good. I hope you are, too, as we continue our study of the book of Daniel. We start off, first off, though, with a psalm. And today, I'm going to start with Psalm 28. And in my Bible, there's a title under Psalm 28. It's this: Rejoice Because of Answered Prayer. And I like it because we are going to be talking about answered prayer in the book of Daniel. And so this is the psalm, Psalm 28. To you I will cry, O Lord, my rock. Do not be silent to me, lest if you are silent to me, I become like those who go down to the pit. Hear the voice of my supplications when I cry to you, when I lift up my hands toward your holy sanctuary. Do not take me away with the wicked and with the workers of iniquity, who speak peace to their neighbors, but evil is in their hearts. Give to them according to their deeds and according to the wickedness of their endeavors. Give to them according to the work of their hands. Render to them what they deserve, because they do not regard the works of the Lord nor the operation of his hands. He shall destroy them and not build them up. Blessed be the Lord, because he has heard the voice of my supplications. The Lord is my strength and my shield. My heart trusted in him, and I am helped. Therefore, my heart greatly rejoices, and with my song I will praise him. The Lord is their strength, and he is the saving refuge of his anointed. Save your people and bless your inheritance. Shepherd them also and bear them up forever. And this is the work that God does for us, and I'm sure that each one of us, if we look within and look at our past, we can see that God has saved us. God has blessed our inheritance. God shepherds us always and bears us up forever. And so we can get we know there's a blessing attached to the reading of his word and the acceptance of those words in our hearts. And so it is, and so it is, and so it is. It is. Well, good afternoon, all. We are going to be studying today chapters 5 and 6 of the book of Daniel. A very enlightening book, and all about prayer, all about the wonders that God will do for us. As God is no respecter of persons, what he's done for one, he'll do for us too. And so therefore, we're going to be doing chapters 5 and 6 today. Well, as we start, I'd like to just recap some of the book of Daniel. So far in our study of the book of Daniel, we have experienced, seen, heard, first in Daniel 1, about the faith of young Daniel, the teenager, who made the commitment to not defile himself, especially with the king's food and drink, the king of Babylon's food and drink. In chapter 2, the king Nebuchadnezzar's dream was interpreted by Daniel, and this dream prophesied the rise and fall of four world empires, foretelling the establishment of the kingdom of Christ. In chapter 3, the faith of the three Hebrew boys, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, in the fiery furnace, and all of us are familiar with that story. We did not read chapter 4. However, if you plan to go right ahead, it's the second dream that Nebuchadnezzar had and its fulfillment, confirming that the Most High God rules in the kingdom of men. Now we come to Daniel 5 and 6. In Daniel 5, we find events and incidents familiar to many of us. In chapter 5, the event is often called the handwriting on the wall. In chapter 6, the event is Daniel in the lion's den. These are the two stories also with the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace. Those were the ones that we learned about in Sunday school, and many people do still preach on those because they're very, very important. As with any Old Testament accounts, they are written for our admonition. They're not just stories, but they are important to our knowledge and how we look at ourselves. In chapter 5, there is a new king of Babylon, Belshazzar. And Belshazzar became king after Nebuchadnezzar died. But there's a gap of 28 years between Nebuchadnezzar's death and Belshazzar's becoming king. In chapter 5, it is said that Belshazzar is the father of Nebuchadnezzar is the father of Belshazzar. However, there were several kings in between Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar, and actually also the fall of the kingdom of Babylon under Belshazzar. Babylon was taken over by the Medes and the Persians. So just as was prophesied in chapter 2, after Babylon, the next emperors of the known world were the Medes and the Persians. And so Belshazzar is not a Babylonian. He is a Persian. And so in chapter 5, Belshazzar throws a big feast. And it is during this feast that a hand appears and writes a message on the wall. Now Belshazzar and his revelers are drinking from the vessels of the temple, the vessels that were taken by Nebuchadnezzar from the Jerusalem temple. And during this feast time, a hand writes upon the wall telling of Belshazzar's downfall. Daniel interprets the words and reproves the king for his pride and his idolatry. And that night, the empire is over and the Persians and the Medes take it over. I'm sorry about that. My information isn't incorrect here. It's not until Belshazzar is a Babylonian, and it's not until his death that the Medes and the Persians come in. Now, chapter 6 Reverend Mary Lou is going to discuss chapter 5. I'm going to discuss chapter 6. And in chapter 6, the new king is Darius the Mede. And in chapter 6, a plot against Daniel backfires when he is divinely delivered from the den of lions. Daniel's courageous faith is rewarded, and Darius learns a lesson about the might of the God of Israel. And so now, without further ado, let us move on to the discussion of chapter 5. Reverend Mary Lou is going to lead that discussion. Go right ahead, dear.
Thank you, Reverend Ellen. So, 5, just a brief summary. As King Belshazzar, as he made a great festival, he gave orders to bring the gold and the silver cup, which his father, Nebuchadnezzar, had carried off from the temple in Jerusalem. And they used these sacred vessels, the cups and the bowls, to drink wine and praise their idols. During the feast, though, suddenly a mysterious hand appeared and wrote a message on the wall, which only Daniel, the prophet, could interpret as a sign of God's judgment on the king and his kingdom. Now, the writing inscribed was in Aramaic, and the words were many, many, tekel, and parson. And the interpretation from Daniel, from his prayers and meditations, this was his interpretation. God has numbered the days of your kingdom and brought it to an end. And then the tekel, you have been weighed on the scales and found wanting. And Paris, your kingdom has been divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. So the Belshazzar was very shaken by this. Now, the metaphysical interpretations in the website Truth Unity for chapter 5, for Daniel chapter 5. And from the viewpoint of truth, new thought, truth, the meaning of the name Belshazzar, Prince of Bel, the area, means mere sense judgment or instinct. The fruit of soul judgment in its attempt to rule the consciousness without the aid of divine judgment. Belshazzar is the sun, or S-O-N, quote unquote, or bringing forth of this attempt to rule the consciousness, but without appealing to God, without appealing to divine wisdom, justice, for divine judgment. So he consequently is a mere animal, really. He has no reverence for respect or respect for holy things. He sensualizes all the vessels of the Lord and materializes everything. Now, these vessels of the Lord are of various avenues of expression in the body. Instead of realizing their spiritual significance and use, he reduces them to the material base and the artificial stimulant, for example, the wine. And whereas the divine law weighs such to one as Belshazzar in balance, and he is found to be wanting. And so consequently, the kingdom is taken away. Compared with the civilization of the Babylonians, Cyrus was a barbarian. And so consequently, his capture of this kingdom represents the return of man to consciousness, a state of barbarism. And metaphysically, a king always represents some function of the will, the faculty of will. And Belshazzar represents the sense will, or the lowest degree of will, amounting to instinct or animalism. Now, then in Nebuchadnezzar, now metaphysically Nebuchadnezzar, he represents emotional people who give themselves up to desires of the soul without wisdom and without good judgment. The Hebrew meaning of Nebuchadnezzar is tears and groans of judgment. He represents the emotional child of nature who wants to fulfill all desires of the soul, whether they be good for it or not. The world is full of these Nebuchadnezzar people. They call themselves psychic. They are loath to stand on their own judgment in any manner. When decision is required of them, they fly to some oracle. It may be a friend whose good advice they ask, or a medium, or even the toss of a penny, or the shuffle of a deck of cards. They are willful and rule arbitrarily, refusing to bring forth their own good judgment. They become mendacious and tyrannical. The ultimate of this sort of action is a return to the animal instinct plane of consciousness, as described in Daniel verse 21, which I can read here. He was driven from human society, and his mind was made like that of an animal. His dwelling was like that of wild asses. He was fed grass like oxen. and his body was bathed with the dew of heaven until he learned that the Most High God has sovereignty over the kingdom of mortals and sets over it whomever he will. So it is really dangerous. It is a dangerous thing to neglect faculty of judgment, discernment. If we go to our friends for advice, we are weakened. If we act without judgment, we fall short in all our efforts. And if we trust to oracles and luck, we become demoralized and animalized. Now, chapter 5 is a lesson on judgment. Daniel the prophet, he represents metaphysically spiritual judgment. Now, all the ones, though, here, they all derive their existence from the Most High, from God, and are given in their turn the power to guide their consciousness. When judgment is influenced by the emotions, then degeneration results. When the feelings and emotions rule, a coarsening soul texture results and becomes sensual and animal. Now, when intellectual pride is dominant and when judgment is not tempered by compassion and loving kindness, then judgment becomes willful. And in this state of consciousness, the soul has no aspiration above the animal state of consciousness. And when man loses sight of his spiritual ideals and thinks only of the pleasures of sense, the body conscious, which is Belshazzar, materializes all its functions and uses them to gratify its sense desires. And that's described in Daniel in verse 23. And I can read that. You have exalted yourself against the Lord of heaven. The vessels of his temple have been brought in before you, and you and your lords, your wives and your concubines have been drinking wine from them. You have praised the gods of your silver and gold, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone, which do not see or hear or know, but the God in whose power is your very breath and to whom belong all your ways, you have not honored. So man then may be said to drink the wine of life in the holy vessels, the bodily functions, with his lords, his wife, and concubines. So he worships his idols and no longer sees or hears or knows. Then the final decree of spiritual judgment for this state of consciousness is then for the division of the kingdom, which in man's consciousness is the separation of body and soul. And then this is where the kingdom has ended, and the handwriting on the wall that very day is when Belshazzar is killed. And then the Persians and the Medes take over the land. Now, when judgment is influenced by emotions, we said that degeneration results. And a king always represents some function of the will. Now, we know Babylon stands for confusion, usually of the senses. So it symbolizes mental confusion also. And Daniel was a captive in Babylon. Now, spiritual judgment, Daniel, is held captive by the lower sense judgment of the arbitrary will and cannot express itself fully in man's life and affairs. Now, the faculty of spiritual judgment, Daniel, is concerned entirely with principles, with truth, with the law, and has nothing to do with personality. Then Daniel answered and said before the king, let thy gifts be to thyself and give thy rewards to another. Now the phrase, the handwriting on the wall in this chapter means now as it meant in Belshazzar's day. It means a clear warning that the effect of some cause already set in motion is about to become manifest. So we know that. And the Medes and the Persians here represent the middle land or the psychic realm. When man gives free rein to sense judgment, it ends in confusion, and he sometimes turns for guidance to the psychic realm. This step leaves him in a worse state, though, than before. His only safety is in putting spiritual judgment, putting his faith in God, in the law, in the Lord, and in control of his life. Now, the words many, many, Tekel, Sarsen, they were Aramaic words that were in common use in the markets of Babylon in the time of Belshazzar, having to do with coin weights, so that he must have known their ordinary meaning. What troubled Belshazzar was the mystical meaning of the words, though, and why they should have appeared suddenly before him as he drank from the sacred golden cups. Now, Daniel was able to apply to Belshazzar's kingdom a message composed of words relating to coinage. Now, Daniel's spiritual judgment penetrates to the inner meaning of every symbol. In countries that do not mint money, gold and silver are weighed and measured. Gold, the most precious metal then known, was also a symbol of spiritual man whose value in the sight of God is beyond estimation. The precious sons of Zion, comparable to fine gold. Knowing that Cyrus the Persian was even then before the gates of the city, Daniel had no difficulty in interpreting the handwriting on the wall in this timely fashion, assuming that he had had no part in composing the script in the first place. And then the sin here is for Belshazzar and Nebuchadnezzar was the sin of pride. And the lesson in this book, in this chapter, is about judgment and discernment. And the way of discernment in order for Daniel to discern the handwriting on the wall, the way of discernment always begins with prayer. Praying means breaking through the veil of existence and allowing yourself to be led by the vision that has become real to you, the Christ consciousness. Our prayers are directed not to ourselves, but to a higher another who wants to turn us around, who longs to be present, and who is able to guide us. The one who prays to God pierces the darkness and the senses and senses the source of all being. Also, discernment is about listening and responding to that place within us where our deepest desires are in alignment with God's desires. And discernment is a spiritual understanding and an experiential knowledge of how God is active in our everyday life and is acquired through our disciplined spiritual practices. Discernment is faithful living and listening to God's love and direction so that we can fulfill our individual calling and shared mission. And it is a life, it's a process, it's an ongoing process, a life of listening to a deeper sound and marching to the beat of a different drum, a life in which we become all ears. So thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, Reverend Mary Lou. And I wanted to just pause right here and see if there's anyone who would like to make a statement or ask a question. Right here. We have a moment. Okay, then let us move on then to chapter 6. And we have another adventure of Daniel in chapter 6. In chapter 6, we see that Daniel is a very distinguished gentleman. When he first came to Babylon, we know that it was told to us that God blessed him with the power of being able to decipher dreams and visions. And he did that for Nebuchadnezzar. And he was awarded by becoming one of the wise men of Nebuchadnezzar's court. After he did that, he was given dominion over several provinces. So he became more than just a wise man. He was an administrator in the Babylonian Empire. When we meet him in chapter 6, this is after Nebuchadnezzar has gone, and so is Belshazzar, and the Darius is the king. Darius is a Median, or a Persian. So the Babylonian Empire is gone, and Darius, it says in chapter 1, chapter 6, it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 officials to be over the whole kingdom, and over these three governors, of whom Daniel was one, that the officials might give account to them so that the king would suffer no loss. Then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors because of his excellent spirit, and the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. So in the first three verses of chapter 6, we see that Daniel is not only an official in the empire, but the king is thinking of setting him over the whole thing. So we can see that indeed, even in his captivity, Daniel has exalted or excelled. Of course, we know that he's tremendously humble, and we know that he prays three times a day, and we know that each time he has been in each part of this book of Daniel, whenever he appears, he is prayed up, he prays about, and all is well with Daniel, even in his captivity. I want to stop right there because I was reading let me tell you where I was reading. I was reading in the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary. I happened to look about Babylon, and I just want to let us know that Daniel is part and parcel of our consciousness. It's not a story out there for us to apply some meaning to, which is nothing wrong with that. But I just want to get to the whole personal thing about Daniel. In this Metaphysical Bible Dictionary, under Babylon, it says, Babylon symbolizes confusion or mixture, outer confusion, sense confusion, mental confusion, a chaotic condition. There are times when we find ourselves in the confusion of the sense consciousness, and its thoughts are so strong that they seem to have us in complete subjugation. Such cases symbolize captivity in Babylon. And I'm thinking continue. In Daniel 3, we read, the king made an image of gold. The Babylonian state of consciousness worships gold, and unless you accept its commercial customs, it will put you in the fiery furnace of persecution. And so I was looking at that, and I said, wow, here we are, May 2023, and there is so much confusion in the world, and it daily, nightly, hourly, there is more that is added to the confusion. So I'm not looking at this story as being of Daniel as being a story out there somewhere, but we all live in the state of confusion in our minds, in our bodies, and our affairs. Daniel, judgment, divine judgment, one of those 12 powers, is exceedingly important now, especially because our world not only is bombarded with every kind of confusion and problem that we can name. When we turn on our televisions, we see people sleeping outside on the streets, people who are coming to this country and trying to escape the problems that they had in another country, and they are put on the street or they're shuffled around like cattle. And don't talk about the politics. Don't talk about the people who are trying to control women's rights to their bodies and people's rights to express themselves sexually, etc. There's a lot of problems here. And so judgment is so important because it is the thing that will take us through the problems that not only are personal, but community, national, and international, and planetary. And we have the tools for that. Judgment, spiritual judgment, knows it's what it needs. And Daniel, the book of Daniel tells us very, very, I guess it's plainly, it's prayer and meditation. We must use those so that we can build in us the Christ consciousness, that mind that was in Christ Jesus, to bring to all of these situations, problems, etc. And so, yes, we do live in Babylon. This is not a story that's outside of us. We are living here. What do we use to be able to withstand the pressures of captivity, the pressures that we suck? We could write a whole list of them. I mean, you could fill pages with them, with the problems of captivity, We have prayer. We have meditation, reading the Word of God, and centering ourselves in God's will. And so Daniel is a very important book. I just wanted to say that because I was kind of approaching it from a point of view of a story. You know, when we were in Sunday school, we got the story of Daniel and all that. So I had to be able to cut out all of that. Also, when we're putting this program together, we do a lot of discussing of the text, etc., so that the meaning of it kind of can go from you for a minute. So I just wanted to recenter my head on it that, yes, indeed, we do live in Babylon. And Babylon is that sense, that confusion, the mix of craziness that we are bombarded with constantly. So we are in Babylon along with Daniel. So anyhow, just to get back to the text, Daniel is a very, very important person, and the people who are on his level of administration have observed him, and they are very jealous of him. As it was said in those first few verses, that Darius was thinking of putting Daniel in charge of the whole empire and you know, taking it easy or going on vacation or something like that. But in any case, his peers are very jealous of him, and they connive and flatter Darius into signing a law that will be in existence for 30 days, which says if anyone petitions a god or a person outside of the king, he's going to the lion's den. And they flatter Darius up to the point where he does sign it into law, not realizing or remembering that he and Daniel are very close friends, and Daniel prays three times a day. The people who were jealous of Daniel knew that, and of course they said to Darius after he had signed and sealed this law, well, you know Daniel prays three times a day. And so Darius speaks to Daniel and says, Daniel, you know, I did this law and you pray three times a day, so I don't know what to say to you, but, you know, maybe you better stop praying three times a day for 30 days and then it'll be all over. But Daniel says, no, O king, I am going to pray three times a day to the God of Israel, and that is that. And so the king tells him, well, then I have to put you in the lion's den. You know, I can't rescind anything that I have passed into law. And so he says, I know your God will take care of you. And so he puts Daniel in the lion's den and seals it and all that. He's still very distressed because Daniel is a favorite of his and a friend of his. However, at the next morning when he goes to the den of lions, he calls Daniel. Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? And then Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the mouths of the lions so that they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you. Then the king was exceedingly glad for him and commanded that they take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken out of the den, and no injury whatever was found on him because he believed in his God. So we can see that even in the den of lions, God will take care of us. And so this is such a triumphant, beautiful story. And so the king gave the command, and they brought the men who had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives, and the lions overpowered them and broke all their bones to pieces before they ever even came to the bottom of the den. Then King Darius wrote, "To all people, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men must tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, the steadfast and steadfast forever. His kingdom is the one which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall endure to the end. He delivers and rescues, and he works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions." So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. And so this is our story. And so what does it mean for us personally? It means that even in the most dire of circumstances, in which your very life is threatened, that God has the power. And if you are prayed up, if you are diligent about your prayer life and your life of meditation and of living with God as the center of your life, you will come through any and all adversities. I just want to say a few things about these lions. You know, what are these lions? Lions are the savage thoughts that arise in us when we are wrongfully accused and know we are innocent. I think a lot of us have been in situations where we have been wrongly accused. One who is passing through, especially us, we're passing through regeneration, the process, should, like Daniel, be true to his God in spite of all intimidation and persecutions, for these will sometimes come from without as a reflection of the tumult within. People who are making special efforts, like we are, to live true and spiritual lives often find that those who have been friends turn about and abuse them and accuse them of evil acts. This seems doubly hard to bear, right when the aspiration of the soul and the whole trend of life has been toward holiness. But when we understand some of the inner workings of thought, we see why this opposition is set up. Jesus saw it and said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." The whole tenor of our life depends on our habitual attitude toward truth. If it is constructive, we meet life, no matter what happens, calmly and confidently instead of fearfully. Faith that is held fast under all conditions and circumstances will prove equal to whatever test it must meet. And so it says, what is the most efficacious preparation and defense against persecution and all other negativity? Prayer is the most efficacious preparation against persecution. Like Daniel, we must be faithful in daily prayer. Daniel prayed 3 times a day. Every time we pray, we make a stronger union with divine mind. This union ensures us ever ready help in any emergency that may arise. And so I think about our prayer time and the discipline of prayer time every single day, no matter what. All it does is make us, our union with divine mind, stronger and stronger and stronger until divine mind, that which is divine mind, that which is that Christ consciousness, is so much in our consciousness that we don't even hardly have to think about it. Jesus said, "He that overcometh, I will give to him to sit down with me in my throne." Now, overcoming is gaining mastery over. That the word overcome, it means to gain mastery over, and a throne is the place from which dominion is exercised. This passage of Scripture means that one who overcomes self, and that's what we're overcoming self, attains dominion and mastery. We are to have dominion over what? Our thoughts, our desires, our feelings, our appetites, and our passions. And so anything that is undisciplined has to be brought under mastery, and we have to bring those things under self-mastery. And you know, the tools of self-mastery is tools are the 12 powers. And so those 12 powers, one of which is Daniel, judgment, is critical. These powers are critical for us to bring our consciousness under dominion of the Christ consciousness. And that's what we are about as we move in this path of regeneration. And so what is the symbology of Daniel being thrown into the lion's den? At a certain place in development, spiritual judgment is so apparently given over by the personal will to the mercy of animal forces in the subconsciousness. We do have these animal forces, this negative will, negative wills in our consciousness. And Daniel, by thought and prayer and meditation, opened up the powers of the subconsciousness that he might overcome these powers and these forces and raise them to spiritual consciousness. And we do have that too. Through thought and prayer and meditation, we can overcome any of the negativity that we have in our consciousness, and we can have that spiritual consciousness be ours all the time, so that our thoughts and desires, etc., will be ruled by those consciousnesses. Now, I want to end by saying every faculty is brought forth in character through the use and trial of its strength in various ways. So all of our faculties have to be strengthened. Spiritual judgment, represented by Daniel, is made strong through trials and tests. When we overcome a weakness, we are much stronger. The child of God must master every mortal limitation. It is the Christ consciousness that says, "To him that overcomes, I will grant to sit with me on my throne." The throne represents the place of power and dominion, which one attains who masters himself. And our regeneration process is the process of our mastering ourselves. Self-mastery, which includes dominion over all the appetites and passions, also includes strengthening the higher faculties and the 12 powers. Daniel, judgment, wisdom, discernment is paramount, for it is the deciding faculty of our actions and the way we live and the things we do in our lives. And so it is, and so it is. Okay, I wanted to thank you very much and ask you if there are any discussions or any comments that you'd like to make or want to add something, go right ahead. We have a few minutes.
Reverend Allen,
mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you, Mary Lou. This was very good. Everything was there. One thing that another tool that we have in New Thought is, well, in Unity, I know, is affirmations.
Okay.
Yeah, and we do affirmative prayer. And that is where we, affirmations, you know, are truth statements. And this is what I saw the king, you know, doing when he declared or when he said, even Darius and Nebuchadnezzar, they said, God shall deliver him. That's an affirmation.
So
they declare the divine deliverance and power at work.
Yes.
And so, yeah. And along with the prayer, along with the meditation, and along with they did affirmations, you know, everybody came in and did affirmations also. And so what I see, you know, here is, you know, the power of prayer in action. The thoughts, it talks about the angels. Those are pure thoughts. Angels represent pure thoughts within us. And these pure thoughts, when we can have these pure thoughts, we can control anything around us, no matter how dangerous, how bad, how sad it is. We can rule over that.
I agree with you. The thing is this, though, one has to watch one's consciousness. You know, you have to kind of keep an eye out 24/7 about what you're thinking.
So the way that works is through prayer.
Okay.
Prayer changes things. What prayer does is change consciousness.
Yes.
We're in that negative state of mind, a negative conscious. When we pray, we are lifted up into a high state of consciousness. And so that's how, and we also sing a song about we have to, our thoughts are prayers, and we have to always watch those thoughts. And that's what I hear you saying.
Yes.
We have to watch those thoughts. And we do that when we go into prayer.
True.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm thinking even some of the, I guess, less significant times when I'm watching television and I see someone come on that I criticize them, you know.
Okay, yeah. That's judgment. You make that unrighteous judgment.
Yeah, see, so therefore, you know, but at least I'm aware of it. You know what I mean? I have to be aware of it, as old as I am, I haven't been aware of it until recently. So I know that's one of the pieces. So it's a lot of work, but it's a faculty that's called on at times when you would think it wouldn't be. That's all. And it's very personal. It's not something that anybody else can. I guess I don't know, but watching my consciousness is very, very time consuming, and it's important.
What you have to have with that judgment is love and understanding. It talks about that. The other three Hebrews, love and understanding.
Yes,
you have to bring that into the picture also, along with that judgment, along with that will. All of that has to come under love.
When I'm thinking that, or when I see those people, like we were just speaking about affirmation, I can bring in affirmation kind of erase that kind of thinking, et cetera. Anyway, but you just got to be aware of that, too. I mean, it was so much to be aware
you
gotta, of.
Yeah, you got to be able to see, I see the Christ in you.
Yes, okay. I see the Christ in you. Thank you very much.
I see the Christ in you.
I see the Christ.
And all that other stuff disappears.
It's got to get
better.
It's got to be better.
Yes. Thank God.